News Radio. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
And I'm joined by Anissa McMillan, Deputy Executive Director of Priorities USA. And we're going to start this hour talking about your right to vote. And it is a right to vote if you are eligible. It's not a privilege. It's not something where you have to run a gauntlet to be able to vote. It should be made easy. It should be made convenient because you are an eligible voter. And Priorities USA is committing $15 million to voting rights efforts, $10 million in litigation in various court cases, including one in Wisconsin that we'll talk about, and another $5 million in digital voter education ads to tell you, as you'll hear in this conversation, about the many different ways that the right to vote is under attack. Anissa, thanks for being with us. Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk generally first about Priorities USA and what you're doing nationally to help out with voting rights efforts coming up in the next voting cycle. But to do that, let's take a step back and tell us about Priorities USA, what they fight for, what their values are.
Sure. We are a super PAC. We started out as a presidential super PAC, but have also expanded into areas that include voting rights, training and fellowships for, you know, building a pipeline for the next generation of digital advertisers. And then, of course, the core of what we do is digital advertising for presidential races, the midterms, and some federal races at the state and federal level. And so we see ourselves as not only, you know, just a political group, but also a group that wants to make sure that we build voting rights into everything that we do, because it is such a critical issue in this moment. And because we know that the GOP has been very direct about using voter suppression as a means of winning elections.
Well, that's what makes this topic interesting to me, is that you started off by saying that this was essentially a super PAC related to the presidential campaign. And yet in this day and age, we've had to move past the campaign. So I shouldn't say past the campaign. We've had to go backwards to the very notion of voting rights and the effort to suppress votes, whether through gerrymandering or things that are much more direct at the state level. I guess I have to ask from a personal standpoint, I certainly didn't expect to be here. Did you and the other people at Priorities USA think we'd be spending much more time trying to protect basic voting rights?
Well, we've been doing this work since 2015, and I actually started. I worked for a member of Congress and from Alabama, Terry Sewell, during Shelby v. Holder. And the warning signs were there, you know, that we would come to a place where we, you know, see voter suppression literally built into the systems across the country. And I think just from my personal perspective, having done this for so long, it was the way the issue was covered. It was seen as a partisan issue. It was seen as something, oh, only Democrats care about. And then COVID-19 came, you know, then there was a pandemic that kind of, changed the way we showed up in the world, you know, that, you know, a lot of folks had concerns during the 2020 election about should they vote in person, you know, vulnerable communities were even more concerned, and they are often left out of this conversation to begin with. And so I don't think any of us that saw the warning signs take any pleasure in being right, but I do think that now is the time for all of us to kind of refocus and make sure that we're contributing to these efforts.
And isn't it just so interesting that we've gone from some of the populations that we are used to hearing about, being suppressed or, you know, other obstacles being put in the way. We've now come to the point where Cleta Mitchell, who helped represent the Trump campaign, said the quiet part out loud recently at a fundraising retreat that said, we have to stop making it easier for college students to vote because of the way the youth vote has been turning out more and more Democratic. And I'm sure that has essentially awakened a whole new generation to this topic and the need to not take a voting rights and voting convenience for granted.
Sure. We have been bringing lawsuits on behalf of students since 2015. In some states, the voter ID rules are so strict that it is almost impossible for students and also elderly voters to even meet the criteria, because you either can't obtain an ID or you have a situation where that you know, college issued ID in some states is not even seen as valid. And so we were involved in a case in Florida many, many years ago where there was an effort to stop early voting on campuses, which when you think about the fact that, you know, how convenient that would be, that's absurd, you know, that there would be coordinated efforts to limit voting for young folks. But here we are. And so Cleta Mitchell, she's a part of a broader system that is working to limit the access to the ballot. And then also too, Donald Trump was laid the foundation for, as you said, saying the quiet part out loud. If we can remember or we recall those early pandemic press conferences, you know, where he would go to the White House podium, he was engaging in voter suppression in real time. That was where this idea of not trusting absentee ballots and, you know, not trusting the count on those ballots, he kind of brought that to the mainstream in a way that made it so salient during the 2020 election. And he really planted the seeds for the big lie or the denialism that we see today.
We are talking to Anissa McMillan from Priorities USA. We will continue this conversation after we get a quick check on your weatherology forecast. We'll be back in just a sec. You're up north. Again, this is the anniversary of the birth of Miles Davis. That's Freddie Freeloader right there. Six San Francisco Giants pitchers combined on a four-hitter as the Giants shut out the Brewers Thursday night, 5-0. Freddie Peralta will be back on the mound tonight. They'll play the Giants tonight, Saturday and Sunday afternoons, before heading to Toronto and Cincinnati next week. Currently right now, 45 degrees in Manitowish Waters, 43 degrees in Waukesha, 46 in Platteville, 48 up here on Lake Wissota as we head over to weatherology and talk to meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki for a Memorial Day weekend forecast that is looking to be as picture perfect as it could possibly be. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning, and you're exactly right. There really isn't too much overall to talk about for this holiday weekend other than how calm it's going to be. Looks like a slow and gradual warm-up for the next several days as the warm front slowly pushes through the entire state. Sunny skies for all today and the coolest day of this forecast as well. Temperatures all over the board, though, with highs in the low to mid-60s from Oshkosh down to Milwaukee, a bit below average for this time of the year. A little warmer just to the west in Waukesha, highs in the upper 60s. Then the rest of the state should be in the low to mid-70s, which is pretty average for this time of the year. Essentially similar, if not slightly, a warmer day for tomorrow for everyone. Sunny skies, mid to upper 70s for most, lingering in the 60s along Lake Michigan. Sunday still looks like sunny skies for most, maybe a little cloud cover for parts of central and south central Wisconsin, with highs again in the mid to upper 70s with some 80-degree weather from Richland Center down to Madison and for the southwestern parts of the state. Then for the Memorial Day holiday coming up on Monday, sunshine across the board with nearly everyone in the 80s, a few upper 70s around Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids. Still above average, though, and then again a little cooler the closer you get to Lake Michigan. So overall, a pretty dry and slow and gradual warm-up for the holiday weekend.
We've made the day of every campground owner, every resort owner, every traveler, you name it. It's going to be great. Jennifer, hope you have a great weekend, too. Thanks so very much.
No problem. Thank you.
That is our weather update that we get every day at this time from Jennifer Wojcicki over at Weatherology. And we're back now with Anissa McMillan from Priorities USA. We were talking before the break about the general topic of protecting voting rights and fighting the obstacles that politicians, primarily Republican, I should say exclusively Republican as far as I can tell, are putting in the way. Priorities USA is investing $10 million in voting rights litigation, $5 million in digital ads to protect voter protection and education, I should say. In terms of the legal interventions, you mentioned, or the group has mentioned, cases in North Carolina, Arizona, New Hampshire, Georgia, and Wisconsin. What can you tell us about the Wisconsin one, which is based in the city of Racine?
So that is, we're actually intervening in a lawsuit that is trying to limit or restrict mobile voting units. And those were enacted, you know, through an amendment at the state level that increased access to those units in different communities across Wisconsin. And what has happened is through a GOP lawsuit, they're trying to restrict the use of those. And of course, anytime you take away any accessibility with voting, you create barriers. We know about the barriers that may come from young folks. We've already discussed that. But elderly voters, for example, who often struggle with getting to the polls, obtaining, you know, absentee ballots. And so we're intervening to try to stop the limited use of the mobile voting units because it can, you know, create unnecessary barriers.
Yeah, because we, again, most recently talked about college students, but during the pandemic and after the worst of the pandemic, one of the other points of emphasis from Republicans in Wisconsin, including in legal actions, was to try to prevent people from going into, you know, nursing homes and assisted living centers to assist people in voting. There were people who claimed that they had relatives who were being, you know, coerced one way or another when, you know, the fact of the matter is they may just not have liked the way that mom or dad or grandpa and grandpa was voting, but that's no reason to make it tougher for them to vote. So Priorities USA is equally involved in protecting the rights of older voters as much as younger or voters from communities of color.
Yes, they are at the center of everything that we do. We want to make sure that we're centering people of color who these, you know, to be clear, these laws do target, you know, there's no question about that. But disabled voters get left out of the conversation. You know, people who need assistance. We worked on a case a couple of years ago where a woman reached out to us and just thanked us for intervening. And I think it was a signature matching case where she had a disease which caused her signature to appear different depending on when she signed it. And so we often, you know, the conversation, you know, I'm thankful that we're starting to talk about this more, but there's still so much to consider when you talk about just enacting these arbitrary laws that get more and more strict each time they're enacted. They're also following the playbook that they followed for abortion, where they're, you know, kind of replicating the laws in different states. And then there's a new version that pops up, or the rules, like I said earlier, around voter ID, for example, get so strict that it's impossible for voters to overcome the barriers.
I mean, just look at all the things we've talked about. We've covered communities of color. We've covered college students voting. We've talked about elderly people voting. We have talked about, you know, drop boxes have been banned in Wisconsin. We have discussed the effort to purge tens or hundreds of thousands of voters from the registration rolls in Wisconsin. There just is such a multi-pronged assault on the right to vote, something that is faced by no other organized democracy in the Western world, where a political party is dedicated toward restricting or suppressing the rights to vote, which is why you need to see cases like this in the courts, but also, as you say, from digital ads and voter education. What are those messages that you're bringing to voters generally, overall, about being aware of all of these many ways that their right to vote could be limited or suppressed?
So they pair very well with the litigation. You know, we, like I said, we've been engaged in this since before the pandemic. But around the pandemic, you start to see not only this, you know, panic that had been created by the GOP, but just confusion. And confusion can also be a cornerstone of voter suppression. If you feel as if the system is so overwhelming that, you know, you don't know if you're registered, you don't know if your registration requires ID, or if you need to vote absentee, when does that ballot have to be turned in? How do you obtain that ballot? And so these ads are developed to help citizens walk through that process state by state. Because we also realize too, that because this is such an issue that, you know, and Republicans are just as aggressive, I should say, in the courtroom as they are in terms of enacting the votes, in terms of enacting these laws, excuse me. We know that it's important to make sure that a part of our digital ad efforts is also just making sure that we help voters to navigate through that process. And so they're designed specifically for that. Our digital apparatus has been, you know, in place since 2016. We're all digital packed now. And so we thought it was so important for us, you know, to apply all of those lessons and the infrastructure that we've learned over the years to this issue as well in the digital ad space.
And let's close with a couple of points here. One is that voter suppression is not necessarily, you know, almost physically restraining somebody from voting. It gets people discouraged. If right. your name is dropped from the voter registration rolls, it's, you know, quote unquote, easy enough to fill out a provisional ballot. But what they're counting on is people just getting frustrated, walking away and not voting, as one of many examples where, again, it's not all that coercive or that overt, but they just want you to get frustrated and exactly. not vote at all. And the last point I think we should close with is for those who try to make this point that, well, voting is a privilege and you should have to jump through some hoops. And that's not true. Voting is a right.
The right. It's not only a right, but the voting is a privilege has been used to stoke fear in returning citizens, you know, folks who are coming home and want to make their voices heard at the polls. There are so many different ways that this shows up. And that language can also be harmful to people of color who often, you know, and have always had a conflicted conversation, you know, or I should say a conflicted relationship in this country in relation to their rights and, you know, their accessibility and their, you know, privilege to be able to participate in society. But, you know, it's nothing new. I think the GOP, as a lifelong Democrat myself, I will say that the GOP has done great in, you know, co-opting language and messaging and things to make folks think that this is something that, you know, is not owed to them as a citizen of this country.
Because as I've said so many times, it would be so much easier just if they could compete on their ideas and try to win right. that way. But
yeah, there are no ideas, though. There's no platform. There are no ideas. And so this is how they win.
Anisa McMillan is the Deputy Executive Director of Priorities USA. Thank you so much for what you do. Thank you for taking the time to visit with us and to remind people all year long to be vigilant about attacks on their voting rights. It was great to see you. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And again, you can learn more at priorities.org is the website for Priorities USA. And again, always on the lookout for those so many different ways. I think if you get nothing else out of that conversation with us is that, you know, we've talked in historical terms, there was the poll tax, you know, but and there's the things like taking away drop boxes. But then when you look at all of the other subtle ways to send that message that voting shouldn't be a priority for you, you get a new appreciation for just how very active and ongoing is the effort to keep people from voting rather than, like I said, trying to win on your ideas. I was saying before the close of the last hour in getting an update on whether a deal could be reached to raise the debt limit, that there are indications that the negotiations are going someplace that allow both sides to say they got something of what they wanted and that they were able to head off something like a federal default. The talking that is going, you know, back and forth isn't happening beyond the negotiating table. It's not happening in the halls of Congress. Yesterday, members were told they could go home by Republican Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Many Democrats stayed and took to the floor. And in at least one case, Democrats went over and spoke from the Republican side of the chamber using the microphone that's usually used by Republican members so that the cameras on C-SPAN could show everybody there was not a single Republican on the job in the House chamber yesterday, that Democrats were the only ones there prepared to do the work to pass a clean debt ceiling increase, something called a discharge petition. And Republicans were being urged, if they could just get five of them to sign on, you could pass this cleanly. That's not happening. Republicans are staying united behind House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, but at least the negotiations appear to be leading to something short of plunging the country into a recession. And wouldn't that be some good news? Our friend Mark Jacob is coming up next. We will see you on the other side of this break. You're up north.
App. Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio for this Friday, last half hour before we head into the Memorial Day weekend here. And Mark Jacob joins us, as he does most Friday mornings. Mark, good morning. Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
We are here discussing, again, the comings and goings of Congress. And I guess this will be a bit of an I told you so segment, simply by virtue of we're dealing with Republicans in Congress who, as you noted this morning, they had no problem approving big budget deficits under Donald Trump, but they suddenly have become budget hawks again. Whenever a Democrat comes into the White House, it is just a rinse repeat cycle that we've seen before. And I don't doubt, Mark, we're going to see again.
You know, just on a personal level, it's just amazing that Kevin McCarthy can come out every day and act so appalled that the government is spending money. And oh my gosh, what are these Democrats doing? How can they possibly be spending all this money when that's all he's done when he's been in office is spend money when Republicans are in the White House and complain about spending money when Democrats are in. And clearly he doesn't care about that. It's all just a, you know, an act. But I mean, it's such a tired act, Pat. I don't understand how people keep on believing it.
Not just people. It's that the national media continues to fall for this. That's the part that when I still see, and I get that there's churn in newsrooms, but there's enough of us grizzled old veterans around that it just still knocks me for a loop when I see them chasing the same shiny object, you know, that they did each time. And yet this is where we are.
Right. And so, you know, they're perfectly willing to put, you know, sentences in their stories that say Kevin McCarthy was complaining about the government spending too much money but they don't really find room in their stories for another sentence that says Kevin McCarthy, you know, approved all these increases in the budget, you know, that this wild deficit spending. You know, a quarter of our debt came under Trump in just 4 years, a quarter of it. So, you know, get real here. If we want to figure out also, Pat, did mention the polling, which says, you know, there was one poll came out the other day that said people want the government to cut spending, you know, which is fine. But then it was another poll, which is a better poll, that asked specifically, do you want to cut this? Do you want to cut that? Do you want to cut this? And everyone said, no, I don't want to cut that. No, I don't want to cut that. So, you know, let's get specific on what we want to cut if we want to cut things. And the Republicans are not. I mean, they keep on saying, well, you know, we passed a plan to raise the debt ceiling and cut all these programs. But that plan was not specific in any way. It had complete deniability on what they were going to cut.
The one thing that they've really been specific about wanting to cut is extra funding for the Internal Revenue Service. And again, it's something that goes against their basic fiscal argument, but really is in line with who they consider their priority base to protect. And that would be the wealthiest among us who don't like paying their fair share of taxes.
Well, you know, they've been lying, you know, big time on that whole thing. You know, a lot of that money they say, well, you're going to hire, you know, tens of thousands of new agents. Well, a lot of that it's over a 10-year period. A lot of it is to replace people who've retired. And frankly, I'd like to see, you know, more IRS agents going after more rich people who are cheating on their taxes. And, you know, they've done reporting about who gets audited. And it's way out of line. I mean, black people get audited way more than white people, you know, per capita. It's just patently unfair. And, you know, rich people, you know how to hire people to help them avoid taxes. My personal feeling about this whole debt ceiling fight is, is I think one of the main motives for Republicans is to go after this IRS funding, because they want to cripple the IRS because their wealthy donors want them to cripple the IRS. And the idea that the only agency that's primarily charged with gathering money so that we can have, you know, interstate highways and so that we can make sure that our products aren't poisoning us, is the IRS getting money for the federal government. I mean, it's responsible people in government understand what the IRS does and doesn't view it as an evil force. I mean, if it does bad things, stop it from doing bad things. But its main goal is obviously good.
What, paying taxes? That whole thing about living in a free society and having to pay for the things that we enjoy? Yeah, but yeah, that's the thing.
And the thing, Pat, about paying taxes is, you know, you have Trump was used to brag about avoiding paying taxes.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I'm a rich guy. But then he didn't pay any taxes for years. And that's supposed to be a good quality? Well, if everyone did that, we wouldn't have a government. And we wouldn't have, I mean, come on, we wouldn't have streetlights. I mean, just wake up, people. Well,
and that's the thing, is that we have to do a better job of reminding certain people that these things don't just happen. Streetlights right. don't just appear. Clean water doesn't come out of your tap just because.
Right.
You know, these are things right. that cost money, and more needs to be done to put forward that message, the message that government exists for a reason. Government works efficiently when you manage it properly. If all you're going to do is talk about shrinking it and cutting it and denigrating it, well, yeah, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy at that point, and that is the modern-day Republican Party.
Right. I mean, it's just a matter of grown-ups versus, you know, adolescents. I mean, and just to be really clear, you know, I think that there are probably aspects of waste in government. I mean, there was a new report just this week about how much defense contractors were gouging the government for some of the, you know, products they sell to the government. So yeah, let's look at everything and let's be really careful how we're spending our money. But come on, we got to spend some money. The government is not the enemy. The government is us. If ideally in a democracy, if we're doing this right, the government is us.
Should be us rather than some distant, you know, evil them, which is what we keep hearing that it would be. We're talking to Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times. And as we talk about, you know, news coverage of various things, there's one subject that we haven't brought up here, but I'm sure you've been following. It was a story that went viral about homeless veterans being kicked out of a New York hotel to accommodate, you know, undocumented immigrants. And it, which of course sounds terrible on its face. It sounds tailor-made for right-wing media. It also sounds, you know, too convenient to be true. And that apparently was the case.
Right. Yeah. Well, and various, you know, the New York Post and Fox News and various other people, in, you know, Murdoch owned outlets, they reported, we have confirmed that this happened. Well, they didn't confirm squat. I mean, you know, get serious. This was a hoax made up by somebody on the local level who was just made up the story. I mean, the story was just 100% made up. Mm-hmm. And it was sold to right-wing news media, which was happy to just report it and pretend that they looked into it when they hadn't. I mean, that's the thing. You know, when they say, when Fox News says, as it did, Fox News has confirmed, you know, you would expect that that means that they have checked out the story. They've talked to the people involved. They've checked records if necessary. They have confirmed the story. No, they didn't. All they did is like took what was given to them and reported it. And then, you know, days later, real journalists looked into it and found out that the whole thing was a hoax. It was just, you know, this thing made up to make immigrants look bad and like the evil Democrats are going after veterans. When, by the way, in this budget cutting process, it's clear that they're going after some veterans benefits. So who's going after the veterans? But another thing about this is, you know, people, the real kind of nasty people in the right wing on Twitter, Elise Stefanik and Tom Cotton, those types, they all posted about this hoax. But obviously they didn't post that it was a hoax. They posted that it was real. And lately I've been going on Twitter and asking them why their post is still up and why they haven't apologized for it. Because they haven't corrected it. It's still sitting there. they don't care. I mean, there is no, Pat, there's no such thing as facts to these people. They don't care about facts. Whatever is convenient to them to, you know, for their agenda. And if you're living in a fact-free world, you're a dangerous person in government.
Well, and have we got a presidential candidate for you? If you've decided that maybe Donald Trump's become a little too toxic, or I don't know, lost too many elections, how about that governor of Florida who, again, you know, is all about going after quote unquote woke ideology, but you know, dealing with facts appears to be a different matter all the way around. But Schadenfreude notwithstanding, that was probably one of the more unique launches of a presidential campaign that you and I have ever witnessed, going on Twitter spaces with all of its glitches and, you know, poor numbers.
Well, it was just poorly thought out from the start. All right. So you're starting a presidential campaign. So you're going to go on some social media platform that most people are not on. It's going to be audio only. I mean, it's going to be really, that's kind of weird. Why? So here in 2023, it's going to be, you know, just a version of radio, really. You're not going to go video. You're not going to like face the voters by having an announcement in front of a crowd or even on, you know, TV. You're going to do audio only on a social media platform that hardly anyone's on. And it was just bad thought out from the start. And don't you think, Pat, that maybe his whole goal was to just suck up to Elon Musk or future?
Well, I did see somebody put up, and I'm going to be the first to say I'm sharing this, and I haven't double checked, but this is what I'm going to double check, is that the note from this particular reporter says, 24 hours after appearing with Elon Musk to announce his campaign for president, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signs a bill that will allow Musk's SpaceX and other private space companies from negligence lawsuits following an explosion or a crash. And that, of course, is coming back to a recent SpaceX flight in Texas, where again Musk took all kinds of shortcuts, and basically parts of the launch pad blew up after this last rocket took off, and the debris rained down on cars, and you know, thankfully not too many people. But again, if all of this bears out, and it's another case of a politician, you know, taking advantage of favors and then shielding them from legal liability. Well, are you really running for president, or are you just jealous of Clarence Thomas and you're jockeying for a seat on the U.S. Supreme Court? You know,
right, right. Well, that's another problem with this kind of the way that Republican long-term ideology and conservative ideology would be a good way to put it. The way that it conflicts with what MAGA Republicans are doing now, because I mean, old-time conservative ideology would say, you know, free enterprise system's important. Don't, you know, government shouldn't regulate businesses. Let businesses, you know, succeed or fail based on their own merits. But MAGA Republicanism, which is, you know, the modern version of fascism, and I mean, in a strict speaking way, this kind of melding of corporations and government, is that the government just picks winners and losers. It decides, you know, who to favor and who to not favor. It, you know, goes after a company like Disney just because they don't agree with a law that got passed in Florida. But at the same time, they're going to cut some sort of side deal with, you know, SpaceX just to make Elon Musk feel good. But it didn't work. I mean, the whole Twitter thing for DeSantis was a disaster. Mm-hmm. And the hilarious thing was that immediately they spun it as, well, he broke the internet. So many people were interested that he broke the internet. No, come on. I mean, as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez pointed out, she had more people on social media following her when she was playing some video game on there.
Or so, as Oliver Darcy noted, for context, more people watch CNN at 3 in the morning.
Right, exactly.
And tuned into this. So no, he didn't break the internet. He picked for whatever reasons, whatever motivations, he picked a sugar daddy's platform that didn't work well. And that's how these things work. Let me correct myself in real time here as I looked up the Florida measure. It appears to be less about, you know, exploding debris, but it's more about these private space flights that protect SpaceX from being sued by crew members who are hurt or killed, which, again, you know, it comes back to the whole notion of, you know, signing a waiver before you do something, but it's still special treatment for SpaceX. And is that really the kind of thing we're looking for, you know, our state legislatures and governors to do? So we'll continue to follow all of these various news stories. Mark Jacob, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a great holiday weekend.
Talk to you later.
All right. When we come back, we will have Dan Schumacher here on what is his final day of a chapter as athletic director at UW-Eau Claire. So we'll talk about plans coming up next. You're up north. If it's Friday morning, it's Dan Schumacher, a Grateful Dead super fan, who brings us in with what song this week?
Friend of the Devil.
There we go. Okay. Those of you who watch the live video feed of this radio program know that below Dan's name, it says Director of Athletics at UW-Eau Claire. But as is the case of many of us, there are chapters in life, and somebody's decided that this is the last day of that particular chapter before he... I think what you need is a sabbatical. I know you're calling it a retirement, but I think what you need is just some time on the river or on the lake. And then, you know, by that time, who knows what kind of plotting and scheming you and I will have done for your next adventure. But you leave UW-Eau Claire today on a pretty nice note. What was it, 11 national titles?
Yep. Right in there. So
not a bad day's work, partner.
We've done well. It's been a collaborative effort, but, yeah, it's the 10-year run. It's been a 10-year run, so it's going to move on to a new challenge. But I am going to take some. You know, it's funny you say sabbatical. I actually said that to Human Resources. I said, you know, professors, when they're tenured, over time, they get a chance to have a sabbatical. Mm-hmm. And administrators do not. It's 365 days of the year. And you can have burnout. You can have burnout real easy because of that. So... yeah, I'm going to take a little time off and then, gather myself and figure out what the next step is and try to enjoy a little bit of life. It's been a rough couple of years.
Yeah, but look at you. You just built a house up on the river here and, you have things to – you have toys. You have toys and you have friends. And by the way, when you go turn in the key today and end your blue gold time, you're going to be driving past, you know, what's eventually going to be what it called the Sonatag Center, I believe. It's a whole athletic complex that you helped bring to the city of Eau Claire.
Yeah, the beams to the roof are being set today on the new arena. And they wanted a little signing gathering for people that participated in, you know, fundraising and in the design and the, you know, 7 years it took for this project to culminate, you know, so it'll be bittersweet. A lot of good work has been done, leaving the campsite better than I found it.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're telling me the number of student athletes at UW-Eau Claire from when you started to what you have now.
We're a little over 900 now. I started with about 600.
Mm-hmm.
So we've increased population of student athletes on campus. We started three more sports. We enhanced different rosters at different sports to enlarge them. And mostly that was an enrollment management strategy, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to grow enrollment and or keep enrollment steady during this very challenging time in higher education called the enrollment cliff of 2025. Because of the 2008 recession, the birth rate was so down that we'll have 90,000 less high school graduates in Wisconsin than we did 10 years ago.
Wow.
So all of higher ed have been preparing, and you've seen some small liberal arts schools that have closed down, Finlandia most recently. Mm-hmm. So there's some challenges in higher ed, and sports helps boost enrollment because it gives opportunities for people to do more than just study.
And that was that was the point I was going to make. It's just it's more opportunity, and if college is a more well-rounded experience, you're likely to go and stay and then to take that degree in whatever it is and turn it into something. Let's turn to some other sports here for a second. Again, this too is off the field, but Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred was in Milwaukee touring Major League cities, but there does happen to be a debate going on in the legislature right now about potential funding plans for maintaining American Family Field and then extending the brewer's lease. And Manfred didn't, I mean, he certainly wasn't speaking in any kind of a threatening manner, but, you know, you couldn't help but read into the remarks that if anybody on the political side chooses to play, you know, complete and total hardball, then it's not completely impossible that the Brewers would become only the latest team to at least threaten to look elsewhere to move, if not move outright.
Yeah, I struggle with that. I mean, these guys are rich owners of baseball franchises or football franchises, and then you hold the public hostage. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know.
That's the thing. See,
it's politics. It's all politics.
One man's hostage situation is another man's, you know, buy into economic opportunities that come when you have a major league franchise. Right. And we talked earlier about how the same state support that went toward helping build the Fiserv Forum, where the Milwaukee Bucks play, that state funding has also gone toward sports and entertainment venues in other parts of Wisconsin, admittedly much smaller. But, you know, Governor Evers, for example, used quite a chunk of that federal pandemic aid and geared it toward assistance for sports and entertainment venues, knowing that those are parts of the local economy that, you know, you want them to grow and develop. So, yeah, I don't envy that from anybody that has to debate it. And again, I don't get the impression that we're anywhere near that point, but just the fact that the baseball commissioner was, you know, passing through Milwaukee, you know, gets us talking about what is that ever invisible correct amount of, you know, public versus private support for these things. And what makes it even more complicated, Dan, is they look right down the road where you like to root at a stadium for the Cubs. That's what, 110 years old?
Owned by the owners. I mean, it's not city funded. But then you look down the road even farther, you look at the Chicago Bears. Mm-hmm. That stadium was funded by taxpayer dollars. But the Bears have turned around and bought the Arlington Park racetrack, similar to what San Diego has done with SoFi Stadium, used to be a racetrack, and make it into a stadium. And it'll be their own stadium. So that one I don't have a problem with. Mm-hmm. But they are abandoning a stadium that was funded by taxpayers. Now they're going to go out and buy their own now. And so there's all these things. But at the same time, when you talk about Governor Evers, you know, Governor Evers, what he did with distributing that money, that helped the Pablo Center, which is a nonprofit situation. Mm-hmm. You know, the Milwaukee Brewers are owned by a private entity. They're partners and they make money from it. They're, you know, they're in it for profit. So that's where the whole thing, why aren't they building their own stadium then? Or you know, why does it have to fall back on the taxpayer? Why does it? So, you know, whereas, like I said, Evers gave that COVID money to the Pablo Center to keep it going. Otherwise, it would have closed because there was no performances going on. And it's a nonprofit, 501c3. So it's good and bad on how those things work.
Well, it is. And look, that's why it needs people like you with that perspective of, you know, whether the aid goes for this or for that. In other sports, we should note that in the NBA playoffs, the Boston Celtics are looking, they're not dead yet. Put it that way. Miami was up 3-0. Now it's 3-2. So they're not done yet. And over in hockey, the Vegas Golden Knights were up 3-0, but now it's 3-1 after an overtime win for the Dallas Stars yesterday. So it could still be that, you know, Miami is the kings of winter sports in both hockey and basketball before this is done. We will see how that pans out. Dan Schumacher, happy trails. Thanks. We'll talk to you again real soon. Have a great holiday weekend. Same goes for all of you. Make it a very safe weekend. We are off on Monday, back Tuesday with Hans Breitenmoser. And then remember, you can follow me on Facebook. Just go to Pat Quitelow Up North. Have a safe and wonderful Memorial Day weekend. We'll see you on Tuesday.